Yeah, so I think I generally allow guys just more time, you know. Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary, broadcasting this afternoon from atop high-pressure Greek qualifier tower here at Concordia Seminary. We're in week 8 of the term, and in our collective prayer this morning in chapel, we actually had someone pray for all the language students facing the qualifiers. And yes, since God takes even that into his great purposes, all I can say is they should be lucky they're not reading Hebrews. Or they should be grateful, I mean. So, yeah, boy, this is really interesting here today. We're in Hebrews chapter 9, and verse 15 is where we are picking up. So with verse 14, we had the other shoe dropping, if I could say it that way, about the blood. So verse 14 was by how much, or by so much rather, the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself as blameless to God. So by how much will that blood cleanse our conscience from dead works in order to serve the living God? And so the writer is going to continue now with his first covenant, second covenant. What's interesting is that most people seem to think, and I find it hard to get away from it, that the notion of, or the sense of diatheke actually shifts here towards the whole notion of testament, which is a very interesting move, and I certainly am glad I'm not teaching Hebrews at this point. But Dr. Meyer is teaching the elective in Hebrews in the winter, so be sure to ask all of your questions of him. But we'll just do a little bit of Greek. Verse 15. Kai diatuta diathekes kaines mesites esten. Hapos thanatu genamenu eis apa litrosin ton epitein prote diatheke parabazaon. Tain epangalian lavamen hoi keklemenoi tes ioniu kle runamias. So the writer says, and, you know, Kai is actually flexible. I'm happy to say my favorite paragraph in Blasterbrunner Funk is paragraph 442, which illustrates all the different senses given the context that Kai can have. Can actually have a what the grammarians call a consecutive force, so, or and then. And I wonder if that's what's going on here. So rather than just saying and, but and so, diatuta, on account of this, right? Now we get the subject is mesites here in 9:15. He is a mediator. And then the genitive modifier precedes it. But, of course, in Hebrews, their word order is much more difficult than, say, the Gospels. Mediator of a new covenant. Right? And, again, we've had covenant all along. And that's, you know, that's what happens in Exodus 19 and Exodus 24 and so forth. But at this point, the language or the reference, the meaning, the signification of diatheke seems to shift a bit. Otherwise, it's hard to make sense out of what the writer is saying. So, and on account of this, he is the mediator of a new covenant, hapos. Now we'll expect, of course, a subjunctive verb, which we finally get when we get to labozen, two lines down, from lambano, aorist subjunctive. But first we have a kind of a lengthy genitive absolute construction. In order that, literally, death happening unto or for redemption of the at the first covenant transgressions, if I could say it that way. See, you've got the redemption of transgressions, ton parabazaon, and then the prepositional phrase epi te prote diatheke is in attributive or adjectival position. So a death having happened for the redemption of the transgressions, what, at the time of the first covenant? Something like that. Comma. And now you get the main verb of the hupos clause, in order that they might receive. And who are the they? Hoi keklemenoi. This is the perfect participle passive of kaleo. In order those who have been and are called might receive. Okay, back up. Tain epangelion in front of the verb is accusative, so that's the direct object. The promise, and now the genitive that modifies promise is on the other side of the verb and subject of eternal inheritance. So now we have to decide on the force, among other things, of the genitive absolute. It seems to be taken by a lot of the translations and the few commentators that I looked at as causal. Because a death has happened, which death are we talking about here? And probably the death of Christ, although it seems odd that his death would be spoken of as providing redemption for the transgressions that happen at the time of or on the basis of the first covenant. I mean, what? It just strikes me as an odd way to say it, but apparently commentators at least argue that, well, this simply means all the sins that have happened heretofore. Okay, so we'll take it that way. And of course, ace plus the accusative often expresses purpose, and that's the way it's taken here with ace apolitros in. So to clean up that whole verse, and then we can pause. And on account of this, he is the mediator of a new covenant in order that, since a death has happened for the redemption of the transgressions at the time of the first covenant, those who have been called might receive the promise of an eternal inheritance. Okay. End of sentence. Questions, comments? It's a little convoluted, yeah. I mean, the Greek is, of course, a little more challenging, but it's a little difficult for me to quite make out precisely what he's saying. Now, that's probably 98% of the fact, due to the fact that I'm not all that familiar with Hebrews in general. You know, we're just kind of reading slowly through it. But it is interesting. So, and he's going to press this idea of diatheke being associated with a death, which again pushes the meaning towards testament, right, as opposed to covenant. Will?
Is there any evidence from like direct quotes that have been written down that they actually, their word order was so uncommon to ours that they would throw accusatives here and subjects way over here?
Yeah.
I mean, do we know that that's how they spoke? I mean, obviously that's how they write.
Right. Right. Yeah. What's the difference? The question is, what's the difference between the word order of written Greek and spoken Greek? Well, I don't know. And of course, obviously, we only have the evidence of written Greek. The papyri are, of course, more simple, basic, everyday life kinds of things. But on the other hand, remember that everything was read out loud, right? So a piece like this was designed actually to be read out loud and to be heard. Right, by the congregation, the majority of whom almost certainly couldn't read. Right, so it's really, when you think about it, it's stunning, isn't it, what the human brain can do if it's taught to do it from childhood. Right, yeah. So, so clearly there would be a difference between sort of, it's kind of like written German and spoken German. You know, not that I know that much about it, but I know enough that you get quite a difference. So. I felt better when I was trying to translate a paragraph from Karl Barth one time, and my friend Wolfgang Gruber couldn't make it out, and he was from Germany. You know, he said, I don't know what this guy's saying. I said, well, that's good. I don't know what he's saying either. So. But of course, Barth is Reformed, and we all know that Reformed is bad, and so we can't learn anything from those people, right? Oops, wrong attitude. Ready for verse 16? Okay. Let's get 16 and 17 together. Hupugar diatheke. Do we need a verb? No. Thanaton ananke pherestai tu diathemenu. Diatheke gar epe nekrois bebaya epe mepeta eskie hate ze ha diathemenas. For where covenant. Right. That's the Tonto translation. Where there is a covenant, right? Ananke is an adjective. It means necessary. And you just are supposed to supply the linking verb. It is necessary. What is necessary? When you have these little impersonal it is constructions, you'll typically see an infinitive lurking around. And, of course, we have pharistai there, which is happily the present stem of pharaoh, the one that everybody knows. and it's either middle or passive, typically taken as passive here. And the object, excuse me, the subject of the passive infinitive would be thanaton. And then thanaton, believe it or not, sort of has to be modified by tu dia thamenu, which Will brings up once again the word order problem, right? So something like this, for where there is a covenant, the death of the one who makes the covenant to be brought forward is necessary. Well, I sort of know what that means. There's actually a discussion on what is the sense of Pharaoh here, the passive voice of Pharaoh. Henry Alford actually works it away until it means implied. So to be brought forward in the sense of logically or to be suggested. Okay, and that seemed to make sense here. So in other words, the very notion, the writer is saying that, look, it's commonly known that the very notion of a diatheke involves the death of tu diathemenu. And this is from diatitheme, which the lexicon says occurs in our literature only in the middle voice. So you can see diathemenu. This is actually an aorist participle middle from diatitheme, masculine singular genitive, and it modifies thanaton, the death of the one who is diatithemaing, right? The one who establishes the covenant. And of course, this brings up the question of, well, wait a minute, God doesn't die. Well, if you have a really high Christology, God sort of does die, right? And it's the blood of Christ that's involved. So that seems to be what the writer is saying. And then he explains it, if we can get on and translate verse 17. For a covenant, do we have a verb? No. Bebaya means established or certain, right? Firm. A covenant is established epi nekrois, in respect to corpses or in relation to deaths, right, or dead people or something like that. Again, he seems to be appealing to kind of common human experience, right? This is how a covenant is sort of, you know, put into place firmly. It's when someone dies, right? And then we have this epe clause. Epe here is taken to mean since or because. And now, mepata is actually unexpected here. Who might be able to know why, given the fact that, the verb is iskue, which is a present indicative? Why is mepata unexpected with an indicative verb? Yeah, if you expected anything, it would be upata, right? And so this is actually debated grammatically. Some people suggest that this is a question that expects the answer no. So something like, since it is not strong or it's not valid, iskuo means to be effective or strong or valid, it is not valid when the one who established it lives. Is it? See? Now, that's the way it's taken with some, and others, including, I checked this out in Blas de Brunner, they say, well, no, in a dependent clause like this, you don't necessarily have to follow the simplified New Testament era rule where may goes with non-indicative mood verbs and u goes with indicative mood verbs. And so, and you can see that the editors have punctuated it just as a statement. So, we'll back up then and maybe do 16 and 17 together. And in this context, mepita means never or simply a strong not. For where there is a covenant, the death of the testator is implied as necessary, for a covenant becomes certain in relation to dead people, since it is not enacted or it is not valid when the one who makes the covenant is alive. Does that sort of make sense? Yeah. Interesting.
Is right? Testator a real word?
Testator actually is a real word. Yes, indeed. Yes, yes. Tyler was thinking I perhaps had made that up. Yes, it's from tes, which means word, and tator, which means that I just made up. Right.
In what sense is he using the word covenant then? Because to me, it, we always hear of covenant as the promise.
Right.
But
right.
In this sense, it's more the inheritance.
Yeah, that's enacted when somebody dies. Exactly, exactly. The argument seems to be shifting. And I think a very strong case can be made that diatheke in the New Testament virtually always means covenant, right? But this is the one passage that's really hard to make it mean something other than a testament, again, which is enacted when...
Well, because it's a stupid thing to say that a covenant, between a man and a wife will be enacted when he dies.
Exactly.
You can't say that the marriage covenant is one that goes into death.
Exactly.
This has to be something completely separate than what we must be understanding it in through small English language.
Yeah. And again, Alford tries to, I think, in a sense, validly combine the two when he talks about a testamentary covenant. But really, it's an interesting passage, and it's interesting even in the sense of trying to logically figure out exactly what the words are meaning to the writer. Right. It's not so hard to figure out what's the subject and what's the verb, although that can be challenging too, right? Yeah. But no, this is welcome to one of the more difficult passages in Hebrews, just to know precisely what's being said, right? And this is why commentaries on Hebrews slow down at this point, so which they really do. So, okay, but happily we don't have to answer all those questions, right? And we can move forward, I think, unless there's other observations or comments or. Okay, and now the other shoe drops. Hothen means whence or from. Where, and can also have a kind of an inferential meaning, so therefore, accordingly, that kind of thing. So verse 18, Hothen ude he prote choris haematos eng kekainestai. Yeah, we can just take that much. Accordingly, or whence, or therefore, not even the first, just a feminine singular nominative, and of course you want to supply, diatheke, the first covenant, apart from blood, eng ke kainistai. Now, there is a classic perfect passive form, or could be middle, of course, because you've got the duplication, the ke in between the eng and the kain, and then the lack of connecting vowel. And Ben is nodding because we've just covered this like 3 days ago or 3 minutes ago or something in elementary Greek, right? And kainizo means to renew. Or, as the lexicon suggests here, to inaugurate. Okay? So you translate, therefore, not even the first covenant has been and is inaugurated apart from blood. Right? And now he's going to cite the narrative of Exodus 24 in verse 19, which is a fairly lengthy sentence. So, but again, it's a kind of a picture perfect fifth principle part form, right? So, by the way, if you want to fulfill all linguistic righteousness, you should be aware that only with verbs from the fifth principle part will you use the dative of personal agency. And I say that, even though he's not listening, to make Dr. James W. Vales happy, because not many people know this. So only with verbs of the fifth principle part do you not use hippa plus the genitive to express personal agency. You use the dative of personal agency. Check it out. It's in the grammars. And if you know that and the retained accusative, you may be elected synodical president. Right?
So cast it out of my head tonight.
Yeah, right. Well, no, just pray for our synodical president, right? And for our district presidents and for Dr. Meyer. And, well, let's just pray for everybody. Okay, so let's. I think we can pick up verse 19, at least do most of it. Start with the genitive absolute. Lale theses gar pases enteles kata tanaman hippa mauzeos pante tolao labon tahaima ton maskon kai ton tragon, maybe, meta hidatas kai heriu kakinu kai hisopu autate ta biblion kai panta tanlaan erantisen. There's a verb. Rantizo means to sprinkle. Okay? And it's an aorist. Isn't that nice? Okay. So fairly quickly then, la leo, aorist, la le thesas, aorist, participle passive, feminine singular genitive. And the referent is entele, enteles, so a genitive absolute. For, after every word had been spoken according to the law by Moses, panti tolao, to the people, labon, after he had taken the blood of the calves and the goats? Yeah. Goats, okay. Of the calves and the goats with water and wool red and hyssop. Now put te in front of auta because te is post-positive. And you've got te, blah, 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 kai. So both, dot, 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 and. Both the book itself, remember that auta in predicate position is intensive, both the book itself and all the people he sprinkled, saying. See? That actually wasn't too bad because, you know, the pieces kind of behaved the way you thought they might. Once you got the genitive absolute and you had a, you know, dative of indirect object and a predicate position participle and a meta phrase, and finally you get to the verb if you're patient enough, right? So, anyway, that takes us through verse 19, and we'll stop there and pick up with the quote from Exodus 24, verse 8 next week. So, thanks a lot.